This is Wealth Wake Up on KGMI with Dick Donahue.
The opinions voiced in Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial, or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities offered through Cetera Advisor Networks, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through CWM, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Cetera Advisor Networks is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Guests of Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue are not affiliated with Cetera Advisor Networks, CWM, LLC, or Asset Advisors, LLC.
Are we there, Mike? I'm not hearing anything.
Good morning. Welcome to Wealth Wake Up Live with Camille Copenberg and Dick Donahue. Dick, are you with us?
I am with you.
Awesome.
I couldn't hear the bumper going in, so I'm
all
ready.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Let's talk about the
week. Okay, well, okay, got to go going here. Okay, well, the markets were relatively flat this week as investors geared up for a third quarter earnings season. Economic data were broadly positive and continue to point to healthy economic conditions. September retail sales grew at their fastest pace since March of 2015, due in part to hurricane-related replacement activity for autos and automotive supplies. Of note in the report, building material sales were strong, gaining 10.7% year-over-year, while online retailers were up 9.2%, continuing to take share from the traditional brick-and-mortar stores. Inflation increased slightly as both the consumer price index, which is up 2.2%, and the producer price index, which is up 2.6%, were higher compared to August. The data should enable the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates in December as expected. Meanwhile, the U.S. dollar weakened for the first time in over a month. Year to date, the dollar was declined roughly 9% against a basket of major trading currencies. Notably, the dollar is down 11% against the euro as the European economy has strengthened and the European Central Bank prepares to curtail its bond buying program. In this instance, the declining dollar is a function of improved economic growth overseas rather than an indication of a faltering domestic economy. Earnings season kicked off this week with the banks in focus. J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, and Citigroup all exceeded analyst earnings expectations, while Wells Fargo fell short. For J.P. Morgan, core loans grew 7% year-over-year, while net interest margin, which is a measure of profitability, improved. The Bank of America reduced provisions for loan losses and lower expenses more than offset their soft fee income. Citigroup reported strong equity and fixed income trading revenues, which were partially offset by higher credit card costs. And results at Wells Fargo were impacted by litigation expenses, including these charges, though its performance would have exceeded analyst estimates. Despite the generally upbeat report, shares of the four banks were down for the week, likely due to profit-taking, with the exception of Wells Fargo. The banks have produced solid returns thus far in 2017. Airlines gained on a better-than-expected earnings from Delta Airlines, along with upbeat investor updates from United Continental and American Airlines, both of which report earnings later this month. Importantly, all three indicated that pricing competition has stabilized, which should aid industry profitability and assuage investor concerns heading into the busy holiday travel season. This next week, 52 companies in the S&P 500 index report results. These include industry bellwethers such as Johnson & Johnson, Goldman Sachs, International Business Machines, IBM in other words, Verizon Communications, General Electric, Procter & Gamble, Schoenberger, Honeywell International. Also, Netflix will provide its quarterly update. The stock, which has gained more than 60% year-to-date, is one of the popular FANG companies that have led the market's advance and captivated investor interest for much of the year. The broad swath of earnings reports will provide a comprehensive view of the economy and could contribute to increased trading volumes and market volatility over the near term. Okay, Camille, what do you got there?
Okay, well, I have some Q&A from some listeners that we'll go over this morning. We're going to look into 403B plans, RMDs, still working exceptions and trusts. So the first question.
I'm going to talk a little bit later. I'm just going.
Oh,
I'm all shut
yeah,
up. Okay.
What you got?
I'm remote. I know. I'm just going to say later on today, I want to do a little. How much do you know about the Federal Reserve update? And I'm remote again this weekend, next week, and then finally I'll be back in the. Back in studio with you here in a couple of weeks. But go ahead. You're in studio. You go for it.
All right. Well, the first question from the listener is from John. And he says, I have a question in regards to taking my required minimum distribution from my 403B account. I'm still working, but only part-time for 10 hours per week. Does it matter how often I work, whether it's full-time or part-time, in taking the RMD? Am I right in assuming that as long as I am working part-time or full-time, I do not have to take an RMD from my 403B account? Thanks in advance. I appreciate it, John. Okay. Well, while the required beginning date for your RMD is usually April 1st of the following year that you turn 70 and a half, there is an exception that applies if you are still working. And this exception is only available if the plan allows it and you don't own more than 5% of the company. A plan is actually not required to have this exception. So what constitutes working? There's actually no official position from the IRS on this. So whether you work 40 hours a week or 10 hours, the exception applies. And so working 10 hours would presumably be considered still working. So what do you have to do? You gotta ask your HR and see if that's something that they allow. So that's the answer to that, John. The second question comes from Joe. So here are the facts. The IRA owner passed away after the required beginning date. The primary beneficiary of the IRA is a trust. It's called an accumulation trust. So it doesn't qualify for see-through status. And the contingent beneficiary is a charity. So Joe asks, knowing that we use the decedent's life expectancy and reduce by one each year, how is the IRA supposed to be titled? Is it in the decedent's name? And if so, what Social Security number is used? Or do we use a primary beneficiary, which in this case is the trust, but only the child is the beneficiary, the son's Social Security number? Thanks, Joe. So the answer, an accumulation trust can qualify for see-through status as long as it meets all the requirements. We're going to assume that this trust is not a designated beneficiary because it does not meet the see-through rules. However, it is still the beneficiary of the IRA. So this means that the inherited IRA will be titled in the name of the decedent for the benefit of the trust using the tax ID number used. So an example of this would be the Smith Family Trust as beneficiary of James Smith, deceased. And because the IRA owner died after his required beginning date and the trust does not qualify as a see-through trust, the RMDs will be paid to the trust, and it's using the deceased IRA's single life expectancy determined in the year of his death and reduced by one each subsequent year. So those are the questions that I got this week. We're going to go ahead and take a break here, and we'll be right back. Thank you for listening.
Woodsmith's Furniture is having a quitting business sale. That's right. After 36 years of business, Woodsmith's is closing their doors forever. Woodsmith's name has become synonymous with quality solid wood furniture in our community. They've offered the best selection of solid wood furniture in the Northwest with an extensive selection of handcraft Amish and Mission styles in solid cherry, maple, and quarter sawn oak. From dining sets to bedroom, living room, and home office, Woodsmith's has built up a huge inventory of solid wood furniture over the years, and now it all has to be liquidated. Hurry in for the best selection. All sales are final, and everything must be sold. Owner Monty Smith says, it's been fun, but now we're done. Take advantage of the store liquidation savings in dining, bedroom, living room, and home office during Woodsmith's Quitting Business Sale. The Woodsmith's store-wide quitting business sale is on now with inventory reductions on everything in the store. Woodsmith's Furniture, Solid wood, solid value. Located at 1821 Cornwall, downtown Bellingham.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI News Talk 790 or the Cascade Radio Group.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick, are you with us? Do you want to tell everybody about us?
I am. Here we are. Okay, we're Asset Advisors located out in Ferndale, actually out on the Pacific Highway. That's the old Highway 99 out located next to Wilson's Furniture. Our address is 5060 Pacific Highway, Suite 101. That's Ferndale, 98248. Our phone number is 360-733-1200. That's 360-733-1200. Also like to suggest to check out our website. You can get to us in two different ways. One is assetadvisorsllc.net, but the easy way to go there is wealthwakeup.com. We were just down in Omaha this week for a partners meeting and, among other things, spent time talking about our website content. Mm-hmm. Check out our website. I think you'll find a lot of really good information there. Again, that's wealthwakeup.com. Also, I want to put notice here. This is coming Thursday, October 19th, out at Meridian High School at 6:30 p.m. We are hosting we're part of an organization, hosting another Wake Up Whatcom County rally. And this is being done with Common Threads Northwest at Fourth Corner. And we've got three excellent speakers going to be participating in the program. One is Tim Eyman. You may know of Tim. Tim is the individual out of the Seattle area for years that has worked on different citizen initiatives and currently has got a new $30 car tab initiative that he's in the process of gathering signatures. Tim will be there talking about the process that they go through in doing these type of things and just the different challenges they have. Then we have Glenn Morgan. Now, Glenn has been on the radio a number of times, especially on Saturday Morning Live. He's hosted for Chris a few times, but he is the kind of the public disclosure monitor, if you want to call it. He constantly watches what's happening with different political organizations, entities here in the state, and I think he just filed 10 new complaints, as I understand it, here in the last few days with the PDC on different political organizations locally. So Glenn's got a lot of really good information on what's going on. And then the keynote speaker for the evening is syndicated talk show host here from KGMI, based out of Portland, Lars Larson. You may remember we had Lars up here a year ago, and we had over 400 people out there. So plan on getting there early. We expect a big crowd. I think you'll find that these three people are going to give us a very entertaining evening. So anyway, Wake Up Whatcom County, out of Meridian High School. That's October 13th. That's this Thursday, 6:30 p.m. So go from there. Okay, Camille, I'll let you take it.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about some October retirement deadlines. I'm going to keep talking about retirement today, I think. Last week, I talked about Roth recharacterization, and that deadline is fast approaching. It's October 16th, 2017. That's the last date that you can recharacterize a 2016 Roth conversion. There's another important deadline that's coming up for trusts that became the beneficiaries of retirement assets in 2016. We don't see that a lot or recommend it, but if that's the case, then there's a deadline coming. So some basics here. A qualifying trust can use a life expectancy of the oldest beneficiary of the trust to calculate the required minimum distributions that are payable to the trust as the beneficiary of the IRA. A qualifying trust is often referred to as what I mentioned before, look through or see through trust. And you have to meet these four requirements to qualify. So the first is the trust is valid under state law or would be, but for the fact that there is no corpus. The second, the trust is irrevocable, or the trust contains language to the effect it becomes irrevocable upon the death of the employee or IRA owner. The third is the beneficiaries of the trust who are beneficiaries with respect to the trust interest in the employee's or IRA's owner benefit are identifiable. And then the last is the required trust documentation has been provided by the true of the trust, the plan administrator, no later than October 31st. That's the deadline of the year following the year of the IRA owner's death. So that's that last item that I just talked about is what is often missed. And especially when the trustee of the trust is a family member. So what you want to do, a copy of the trust or a list of all trust beneficiaries and their entitlements must be provided to the plan administrator if an employer plan or to the IRA custodian by October 31st of the year after the retirement account owner's death in order for the trust to be able to use the beneficiary's life expectancy for calculating the distributions. So if you are a trustee of a trust that inherited an IRA last year, you need to make sure that a copy of the trust has been provided to the plan administrator or the IRA custodian by, again, October 31st. So what are the consequences if you miss the deadline? Well, it's going to depend on the age of the retirement accountant's death. So if the owner died in or after the year they turned 70 and a half, then those required distributions can be made to the trust over the age of the deceased owner, not over the ages of any of the trust beneficiaries. And if the owner died before the year they turned 70 and a half, then a non-qualifying trust would have to empty the account by the end of the fifth year after the death of the account owner, not over the ages, again, of the trust beneficiaries. And in addition to that, any distributions that are held in the trust and not passed out to trust beneficiaries in the year of distribution will be taxed at trust tax rates. So if you have a five-year payout, that could actually mean 40% or more of retirement account could be lost to taxes, federal, state, local, and a 3.8 net investment surtax. And that's not a pretty outcome. So that's that deadline. Again, if you had a trust as the beneficiary of an IRA. Dick, do you got something out there?
Yeah, I got a little blurb here I saw that I thought was kind of interesting. U.S. is now listed as the most investor-friendly in the world, and it should help you sleep better to know that you're in the most investor-friendly nation in the world. The United States received the highest score in Morningstar's Global Fund Investor Experience Report, with top grades for its low fund expenses and strong disclosure practices. But analysts pointed out there are areas for improvement, including sales practices, regulation, and taxation. For one, U.S. regulators seem to be understaffed and may not be able to handle the necessary supervision and oversight. And while the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission is the primary regulator for the fund industry, the Commodities Futures Trading Commission steps in when a fund invests in derivatives tied to commodities. The Department of Labor's fiduciary rule, part of which went into effect in June, also affects mutual fund sales. The Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, or what we know as FINRA, regulates security firms in the United States who are distributing sales literature and funds themselves. This overlap among multiple regulatory entities has the potential to create confusion and inconsistencies both for fund companies and for the investors, the report said. The unified regulatory leadership would be preferable to competing standards currently in place. In addition, there is no regulatory framework in the U.S. regarding soft dollar arrangements, something Morningstar frowns upon. The researcher defines soft dollars as something more as brokerage commissions that the fund doesn't pay with cash, but rather with other goods or services that it purchases from the broker-dealer that executes trades. Unlike some other countries, there is no requirement that soft dollars be used exclusively for the benefit of the fund's research, the report said. Ideally, fund companies would not use soft dollar arrangements at all, but if they do, they should be disclosed and used on research that directly benefits the fund. Morningstar does not approve soft dollars being used to offset fund management expenses, pay entertainment costs, and so forth. Very common in the industry to see a lot of fund sponsors pay for trips and pay for little givies And they do this with the soft dollars because they turn around and pump the trading expenses through different trading firms, so they get the offset on the commission. So it's a little game that's been around for a long time. Another downside is that investors cannot buy funds outside of the United States, which Morningstar argues limits his choice. So, for example, we have very difficult as Americans buying funds in Canada, even. Not that we necessarily depends that you want to, but it's just the fact that you can't. And unlike other countries, funds must distribute realized gains to shareholders on an annual basis, which means that you pay tax on them annually, whereas a lot of other countries, you don't pay taxes on it until you actually make a final withdrawal. And another criticism is that all registered investment advisors in the U.S. are acting under a fiduciary standard. We are registered investment advisors and asset advisors, incidentally. Many brokers are still operating under what they call the lower suitability standard, and that's the brokerage standard. And the DOL rule has helped in that regard, requiring advisors to act in their clients' best interest in retirement accounts. But part of that rule has been delayed until 2019. So for the time being, though some brokers are still allowed to sell higher commission funds with lower cost alternative, might be better for the investor, the report said. So basically, it's back to the fiduciary rule again, and the fact that acting as a fiduciary is in the client's best interest. But Dick Donahue, Camille Kopenberg with you with Wealth Wake Up Live here at KGMI this Saturday. We'll be back after news and sports. Thank you for being with us.
Bellingham has a new radio station filled with the greatest hits of all time. Relive Washington's favorites every day on 98.9 and AM 930. K-Bay. Hits like these.
Take it easy. I'm picking up good vibrations.
Relive your favorites every day on 98.9 and AM 930. K-Bay.
One of the most proactive things we can do to end child sexual abuse is the education of responsible adults. Imagine, for a moment, a community where all adults actively work together to change a cultural norm, from one where child sexual abuse is hidden by fear and denial, to one where every child is better protected throughout the community. Hi, this is Byron Mannering. I'm the Executive Director of Bridget Collins Family Support Center. Now is the time for our community to be steadfast in protecting our children so that all kids can grow up healthy and whole. You can be the change. We invite you to join the over 6,000 citizens who have already been trained in Whatcom County as stewards of children. You can register to attend a 2-hour Stewards of Children training by going to our website, bridgetcollins.org, and clicking on the For Parents page. There is a cost of $10 per person, but if that is a problem, we can work with you. Let you and your organization learn the basics of preventing child sexual abuse.
KGMI News Update.
KGMI News time, 11:30, 49 degrees in Bellingham, heading for a high of 52 today. Millions of Americans are bracing for changes to their health insurance. President Trump issuing an executive order yesterday that did away with subsidies that cover insurance costs for lower-income Americans under the Affordable Care Act. ABC's David Wright reports from the White House.
This morning, the president is patting himself on the back for his changes to Obamacare. He has consistently talked about these subsidies to insurance companies as being basically corporate welfare. This morning, he tweets, health insurance stocks, which have gone through the roof during the Obamacare years, plunged after I ended their Democratic windfall.
That's ABC's David Wright. Our state can challenge President Trump's latest travel ban. A federal judge granted State Attorney General Bob Ferguson's request to lift a stay that halted the state's case. It's a subject Ferguson is passionate about.
Behind all those constitutional provisions, behind all those statutory provisions, at the end of the day, it's about people's lives and the impact on their lives and the future of our country and our Constitution.
The new ban goes into effect Wednesday. The most recent restrictions affect citizens of Chad, Iran, Libya, North Korea, Somalia, Syria, Yemen, and some Venezuelan government officials. For those with a rare form of blindness, a potentially groundbreaking treatment is moving close to approval, according to ABC's Todd Ant.
There's good news for patients with an inherited condition that gradually destroys eyesight. Philadelphia-based Spark Therapeutics says Luxturna, an injectable therapy, aims to improve vision by replacing a defective gene needed to process light. The panel experts to the Food and Drug Administration voted unanimously in favor of Luxturna, which amounts to a recommendation to approve the therapy. The FDA has until mid-January to make its decision. One pharmaceutical analyst estimates the drug will be priced between $350,000 and $450,000 per injection. Todd Ant, ABC News.
KGMI dependable forecast. Cloudy skies, a high of 52 yet today with light southeast winds on the water. Sun's back by lunchtime tomorrow with a warming high of 59. Showers Monday and 62. Rain Tuesday through Thursday with highs of 53. 49 now in Bellingham. Mike Davis, KGMI News.
From ABC Sports. I'm Joey Weiler. College football as we speak. At half, number 17, Michigan, a 13-3 lead at Indiana. Michigan hurt by 11 penalties for 98 yards in the first half. Caron Higdon's 12-yard run, the game's lone TD. In the third, number 20, NC State is tied at 14 at Pitt. For the Wolfpack, Nyheim Hines with an 83-yard TD run. Also halftime, number 24, Texas Tech leads at West Virginia 28-17. Nick Szymanek, four TD passes, two to TJ Vasher, and still in a lightning-delayed start, number 6, TCU at Kansas State. Real class move by Dabo Swinney last night after number 2 Clemson is upset at Syracuse. The Tiger coach visiting the Orange locker room offering congratulations. Clemson was a 25-point favorite and held the nation's longest win streak at 11 games. This is ABC Sports.
Let's talk about sleep. You need it to function every day, and a good night's sleep starts with the right pillow. That's where MyPillow comes in. You've heard everyone talking about it. If you're having trouble sleeping, you know, tossing and turning, waking up with neck pain, sounds familiar, right? Well, MyPillow may be the answer. MyPillow is made from patented material that will adjust to your individual needs regardless of your sleep position. It won't go flat, and it stays cool because, you know, who doesn't want a cool pillow, right? And it comes with a 10-year warranty. Just go to MyPillow.com, click the Radio Listener Special tab, and use promo code SKY to get two premium king or queen pillows and two additional go-anywhere travel pillows, all for 50% off and free shipping. That's MyPillow.com, promo code SKY, S-K-Y, or call 1-800-635-1825. 1-800-635-1825. Better sleep starts with MyPillow.
Bad news for those Dodgers entering tonight's National League Championship Series opener against the Cubs in L.A. Shortstop Corey Seager's lingering back problem now causing him to be omitted from the Dodgers' NLCS roster. Manager Dave Roberts calling it a muscle issue, while Seager missed three straight days of workouts this week. Jose Quintana pitching against Clayton Kershaw. Meanwhile, that ALCS continues this afternoon in Houston. Astros lead the Yankees one game to none. This after a memorable night during and after the series opener for Houston left fielder Marwin Gonzalez. In the fifth, he throws out Greg Bird on a close play at the plate. Then after the game, Gonzalez rushing right to a local hospital where his wife Noelle was giving birth to a baby boy. So both Mr. and Mrs. Gonzalez delivering. Luis Severino opposing Justin Verlander today. First pitch shortly past 4 o'clock Eastern. Elsewhere, the Cavaliers trading forward Richard Jefferson, guard Kay Felder, and 2 second-round draft picks to the Hawks for the draft rights to 2 European players. Thus, Cleveland creates 2 trade exceptions. And Alex Rodriguez admitting he greatly regrets using steroids. Interviewed on an upcoming edition of Joe Buck's show, Undeniable, on DirecTV, A-Rod says being on the juice has cost him millions, possibly a spot in baseball's Hall of Fame. Joey Wallace, ABC Sports.
Get news updates, hear your favorite talk shows, and listen live all day without turning a dial. Go to KGMI.com and hit Listen Live.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live with Camille Copenberg and Dick Donahue. I think we lost Tom from Port Angeles. He had a question, and so we'll have Dick start out this next segment.
Okay, thanks, Camille. Okay, well, as you can tell, we're doing things remote. Well, I didn't hear that sports report, but I sure didn't want to hear that WSU-Cal game score again anyway. So that was not a real pretty game for us Cougar fans. Anyway, okay, I got a little quiz here for you. How much do you know about the Federal Reserve? You know, the Federal Reserve Bank quietly but critically influences every aspect of the economy. So if you can answer, I got 15 questions here about the Federal Reserve System and its leadership and its operations. Let's see how many of them you can get answers to. This is for our listeners, of course. During which administration of U.S. president was the Federal Reserve first established? It got Theodore Roosevelt, William Howard Taft, Woodrow Wilson, or Calvin Coolidge? Well, for those that are a little older, may remember and do a little history, that was Woodrow Wilson. Then there was, how many Federal Reserve districts are there? What happens is the U.S. is divided up into different districts across the country. Are there 5, 7, 9, or 12? Well, the answer on that one is there are 12 Federal Reserve Bank districts across the United States. Our area is covered by the Federal Reserve Bank out of San Francisco. And then which city does not host the Federal Reserve Bank? And let me give you a list of countries or cities here. One is Chicago, second one is Cleveland, third one is Houston, and the fourth one is St. Louis. And the answer to that is Houston. That Chicago, Cleveland, and St. Louis all host a Federal Reserve Bank. Then since 1977, the Fed has had what we call a dual mandate. Well, what is that dual mandate? Is it to increase exports and decrease imports? Is it to lower wages to raise employment? Is it to control inflation and maximize employment? Or is it to raise stock prices and lower interest rates? Well, the correct answer on that is the dual mandate of the Federal Reserve since 1977 is to control inflation and maximize employment. Then the next question is, what is the title of the officer who heads up the Fed? We have Janet Yellen, who's currently serves in that position. Is she the secretary? Is she the chair of the Federal Reserve? Is she the president of the Federal Reserve? Or is she the chief executive of the Federal Reserve? We refer to the head of the Federal Reserve as the chair of the Federal Reserve. And then the Fed's primary tool for influencing the economy is one, raising and lowering taxes. Two, controlling deficit spending. Three, buying and selling securities. Or four, raising and lowering interest rates. And if you answered raising and lowering interest rates, that is the correct answer. That is what the Fed's primary tool for controlling the economy is, or influencing the economy. And then number five, next one is, what is the Federal Reserve's primary source of income? So in other words, what supports the Federal Reserve? Is it appropriations from Congress? Is it interest earned on U.S. government securities that it owns? Is it because it levies on commercial bank fees? Or does it excise taxes on imports and exports? Well, the correct answer there is the Federal Reserve is supported by interest that's earned on the U.S. government securities that it owns. And then, how many members of the Federal Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System are there? And the question and answers there were 3, 5, 7, or 9. Well, there are 7 members of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System. And then the Federal Open Market Committee consists of how many members? There's 4, 7, 11, or 12. Well, it just so happens that there are 12 members of the Federal Open Market Committee. Then the next question, the Federal Open Market Committee is required by law to meet at least how many times a year? 2, 4, 6, or 8? They are required to meet four times a year. Typically, you'll see them meet somewhere in the 7 to 8 range. And let's see, if the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee decides to expand the monetary supply, what would it do? Well, A, it'll order the controller of currency to print more currency. It'll issue directions to sell Federal Reserve notes to banks. C, it'll raise the discount rate to member banks. Or D, it'll issue directions to buy government securities. And the answer to that, if they are going to expand the money supply, is it would issue directions to buy government securities. Then the next question is, an open market purchase of bonds by the Federal Reserve causes what? It causes the money supply to fall and bond prices to go up. It causes the money supply to rise and bond prices to fall. It causes the money supply to rise and bond prices to go up. Or it causes the money supply to fall and bond prices to fall. Again, the question was, the open market purchase of bonds by the Fed causes. The answer to that, it causes the money supply to rise and it causes bond prices to go up. Next question is, members of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve, they are, one, appointed by the President for a 14-year term, appointed by Congress for a 12-year term. They are elected by member banks for 6-year terms, or they are appointed by the Council of Economic Advisors to 4-year terms. And the correct answer to that, the board members of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve are appointed by the President for 14-year terms. Next question is, which is not a monetary policy tool of the Fed? Well, one is discount rate, second, balanced accounts, open market operations, or reserve requirements. The correct answer there is that the monetary policy tool, which is not a monetary policy tool, is to balance accounts. The discount rate, the open market operations, and the reserve requirements are all monetary tools of the Fed. And then who is the longest serving head of the Federal Reserve? Now we go back to Ben Bernanke, or Alan Greenspan, or William Machesey Martin Jr., or Alan Greenspan. For those of us who have been around a few years, the answer to that one is William Machesey Martin. He served back in the 60s and 70s for a long time. He was the longest serving head of the Federal Reserve. So those are the questions that I have about the Federal Reserve. Just a little knowledge there for you, hopefully. I'll go ahead and give us a quick one here. For fans of 80s television, Remington Steele was a classic. A female detective invents a fictional male partner named Remington Steele to overcome a bias against female detectives. The interesting twist of the show is that the only day Remington Steele, played by Pierce Brosnan, shows up for work, two entrepreneurs face the same problem with their technology startup. Rather than fight the biases head-on, they invented their own partner, Keith Mann. Mr. Mann only interacted by email, and they found that vendors were significantly more responsive to Mr. Mann's inquiries than their own, so Laura Holt would be proud. Okay, Dick Donahue, Camille Kopenberg with you this Saturday morning with Wealth Wake Up Live. One more plug here for next Thursday night, October 19th, over at Meridian High School, 6:30 p.m., another Wake Up Whatcom County rally. Tim Eyman, $30 car tab, Glenn Morgan, Public Disclosure Commission monitor, and Lars Larson, syndicated talk show host. Come out and join us. Be there early. We'll expect a big crowd. Anyway, thanks for listening. I'm going to turn this back to Camille for the rest of the show, and have a good week.
Say, folks, we should never take our freedom for granted or forget the brave men and women who protect our country. And that's why this Veterans Day, my friends at Mahindra are holding their fourth annual military salute giveaway. The winner will receive a Mahindra utility vehicle. That's right, a brand new camo Mahindra XTV 750S flex hauler. Now, the last winner, Sergeant Tom Simmered, is loving his Mahindra XTV, and you could be next. To nominate someone who is active duty or a veteran of the U.S. military and get official rules, just visit rushlimbaugh.com. Look for the Mahindra Military Salute Giveaway. Thanks to Mahindra, the makers of the toughest utility vehicles on Earth, and God bless all of you who protect our freedom.
Take advantage of rock-bottom prices and test drive a Mahindra today at Town & Country Tractor in Monroe. Or call 360-794-5426. That's 360-794-5426.
The KGMI Morning News with Joe Tien and Alex Gray on the podcast app and in the iTunes store on your smartphone, computer, or tablet.
Because there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Hey guys, how do you think you did on that quiz? If you want a copy of the Federal Reserve questionnaire, give us a call, 360-733-1200. I'm going to continue to kind of hit on the IRA topics today. And one of the things that I want to talk about is some of the consequences of doing a Roth IRA conversion. So one of the questions that many people have is regarding whether a taxpayer could transfer funds from a traditional individual retirement account to a Roth IRA without incurring a tax liability. So this is how the IRS explains it. The IRS explains that at any time, an owner of a traditional IRA can make a conversion. That is, he can transfer funds from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA. However, pre-tax amounts in a traditional IRA, for example, earnings that are transferred to a Roth IRA are taxable in the year transferred. The IRS does point out that this applies to distributions from qualified plans and not to distributions including conversions from IRAs. The IRS thus considers funds in a traditional IRA as pre-tax amounts unless you show that you pay taxes on those funds. So the way to do that is you can do it one of three ways. The IRS would like to have either a copy of your income tax returns. The second option is the Form 1099-R. And then the most recommended form is Form 8606 for non-deductible IRAs, which are filed by taxpayers who receive a distribution from an IRA that contains after-tax amounts. So basically, if you have already paid tax on that money, you want to tell the IRS that you have done so. So again, that form is 8606. If you've got questions about that, give me a call. Another little note on the IRS. This happens every year, and it seems like cybersecurity is just getting worse and worse. But the IRS has alerted tax professionals, so this is for you CPAs out there and their clients, to a scam where cyber criminals gain access to an annuity and life insurance account. So here's one variation of that scheme that's happening right now. The IRS warned in a release, a cyber criminal impersonates a legitimate cloud-based storage provider, and then what they'll do is they send out a phishing email to the tax professional, enticing him or her to provide their email credentials. That's including username and password. And once the criminal gets access, they steal the client email addresses, and they will go ahead and impersonate the tax professional. They'll send out emails to the clients with a fake IRS insurance form attached, and the email requests that recipients complete and return the form. So using the data from the completed form, the cyber criminal will impersonate the client and contacts the individual insurance company, and then they're going to go ahead and obtain a loan or make a withdrawal from those accounts. So in that release, the IRS is reminding tax professionals to be on guard for phishing emails, free offers, and other common tricks that scammers use. The agency said that the tax professionals who have data breaches should contact the IRS immediately. On Friday, the IRS issued another alert warning taxpayers that various types of scams continue to run rampant across the country. In addition to online scams and schemes, the list includes fraudulent phone calls and tax refund identity theft. So basically, if you're not expecting the email, then you should probably call the sender and verify the information. That's my biggest tip. You know, if somebody sends out like a, I've seen like DocuSigns being sent out. And if you're not expecting it, again, verify with the sender, give them a call. It's easy to give information out on the internet, but call to verify. So that's just something to note out there. And then I want to kind of continue to talk about retirement planning today. So we've got some retirement planning challenges under tax reform. And tax reform is good. You know, we're looking to simplify the tax system code. But there are some things to think about the proposed plan, how you can prepare for it, what you can do now. And there actually might, you know, you might be losing out on some big deductions, even in lieu of that larger standard deductions. and that could cause taxes to rise in retirement. So some things to think about here. All right. So during retirement, you're counting on a lot of those deductions to reduce your taxable income. And under this latest tax proposal, some of the biggest deductions are kind of on the chopping block. It's important to address what might happen before you know exactly what that final law will be. So here's an example. As you get older, you tend to have larger medical deductions. And these deductions are scheduled to be eliminated and replaced with a larger standard deduction. But that might not be close to the amount you will be spending on medical bills. Medical bills are expensive in retirement. And so that can mean paying higher taxes on retirement income, like getting more money out of your IRA and paying those taxes. So let's start planning now. You know, we're in this transition period between tax proposals and an actual new tax law, however long that's going to take. So let's have some planning conversations based on what we can do now to keep taxes low in retirement. And the higher the tax bill, the less there will be in retirement and less likely it is that money will last as long. So keeping taxes lower in retirement is critical. Losing big tax deductions, even in lieu of a larger standard deduction, may cause taxes to increase. So under the current law, RMD income is somewhat sheltered by itemized deductions. I talked about it in medical expenses. Then we also have real estate taxes, state and local income taxes. And in addition to investment income-related deductions, such as, let's say you have a financial advisor, you've got tax planning and preparation fees, which are currently deductible, subject to the 2% AGI limit for those who itemize, who would be axed under those current proposals. So here are some things. The first I want to talk about is disaster relief. So if you know somebody or maybe had property or were affected by the recent hurricanes, the casualty loss deduction would be lost too in the new proposal. And that's a pretty large deduction if you've been affected. On September 29, the Disaster Tax Relief and Airport and Airway Extension Act of 2017 was signed into law, and it's providing relief on several fronts. That's including enhanced deductions for casualty losses attributable to hurricanes. That law eliminates the current 10% of AGI threshold and allows deductions to be claimed for losses that exceeded $500. This deduction is scheduled to be eliminated and possibly retroactively, which would negate this benefit as if it never happened. So what do you do? Well, the solution is to take advantage of a special provision in the current law that can allow the casualty loss deduction for those in federal disaster areas to be claimed in the prior year, so 2016. So what you would want to do is you'd go out there, do an admitted return, and it'd be filed back, and you can lock that deduction for 2016. Another item for Roth conversions, again, you want to address those Roth IRA conversions now, and that might mean paying some taxes now, but never again. And there are no lifetime RMDs for Roth IRA owners. This can help taxes lower in retirement because any Roth distributions in retirement will generally be income tax-free. So you won't have to worry about losing tax deductions that could have lowered the tax on your IRA RMDs. And although doing a 2017 Roth conversion will trigger a tax now, at least some of the tax can be offset with the deductions, which may not be available in future years. A 2017 Roth IRA conversion is risk-free since that is one of the few tax moves that can be undone, again, up to October 15th, 2018. And if not converting, evaluate whether it pays to make more taxable income from the traditional IRA in 17 in excess of the required amount and offset that with deductions that are still available. In the same vein, let's look at deductions that can be bunched into 2017 to lock those in. So medical expenses for elective surgery, dental work, eyeglasses, and other larger medical bills, including typically larger entrance fees for life care facilities, and prepaying state and tax local taxes. If money is scarce, give less to charity this year since that deduction is expected to remain untouched and available next year. So we might be shocked to learn that some of these biggest offsets to taxable retirement income could go away. But at a minimum, let's have conversations now, even if we don't know what the final tax law details are going to be. Well, guys, that's all I have time for today. Appreciate you listening to us, Wealth Wake Up Live on KGMI. Have a great weekend. The opinions voiced in Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial, or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities offered through Cetera Advisor Networks, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through CWM, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Cetera Advisor Networks is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Guests of Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue are not affiliated with Cetera Advisor Networks, CWM, LLC, or Asset Advisors, LLC.